Good afternoon. I'm Alexander Repnin. I have been programming for almost 30 years in Lisp. And actually the first time I've been to this conference, ask me maybe tonight if I'll ever come again. That's a different question. But so currently at the University of Lugano, but usually in Colorado. So let's see, what's my goal here today? I want to talk about some maybe slightly wacky ideas in terms of integrating Lisp and XML. And so the idea is actually to merge two paradigms, where one is essentially about computation and the other one is more about data sharing. So I want to integrate, and that's the most important part. If you take anything home tonight here, it would be to integrate at a language level, not at an API level. So why unify XML and S expressions? Tricky question. I'm not personally, you know, XML is not my hobby. I'm not sort of selling XML or anything like this. We just found that we were forced in some sense to deal with XML and found existing tools rather tedious to use. So in some sense, XML has been almost like a foreign body to Lisp, and it was just pure painful for us to use it, and we were thinking, why is it so hard? How could we change that? How could we make things a bit more friendly to each other? The reason why we have done that is actually, you know, we integrate a lot of our applications go between different PCs, platforms, we run stuff on TVs, cell phones, etc., you know, different programming languages, networked applications, and so XML essentially is a given. So that's just that. Now, my presentation will be three parts. The first, I think since this is the first time here, I should share a little bit of my background. I don't want to spend too much time on that. The second part, and I'm giving you a little teaser here, I'm not sure if you can see this, is essentially this idea of the X expression, where basically we just completely merge the two S expressions and XML into one, right? Set Q, a variable in Lisp, an X expression, boom, there it is, right? No more API. What does it mean? I'm going to talk about that. But I think it may be also important for me to talk in the context of an actual application, because I'm not necessarily interested in theory, particularly not any kind of theory about XML. I'm very pragmatic in that sense. So I'm going to talk about agent cubes, how to make visual programming languages for people who are usually not doing any kind of programming, and how do people use this to make some interesting, exciting 3D real-time visualization simulations and games. So a little bit of my background that I should tell. So I started working on this kind of platform. Actually, I started to work before on Lisp. But so I programmed, you know, 64,000 CPUs in Lisp. This was a lot of fun. But as you can tell, you know, from the performance measure I give you there at the bottom, at that time at the University of Colorado, we bought this nice, you know, gigantic black cube. We spent about $2 million per gigaflop to compute stuff. Now we're trying to program things like Sony PlayStation 3s, and we spend 23 cents per gigaflop. So what precisely does that mean, right? So how can we use Lisp to sort of tease that kind of performance out? And I give you a sense that one of my goals was always to help people to use these kind of platforms. And at the time, for instance, the connection machine simply didn't turn out because scientists could literally not wrap their head around 12-dimensional hypercubes. You know, they would say, I'm just simulating weather patterns, three dimensions, make a lot of sense to me, but what should I do with the rest? You know, please explain me. And so that was a clear mismatch. And so that ever since has been my sort of quest, you know, to say, what can we actually do in terms of new computational models that would make it much easier? Then the second thing that I'm exploring, and maybe spend even more energy on that, and you may think it has nothing in common with the thing that I just told you about, but it's actually this idea of helping people to think about programming. And specifically, I'm teaching video game design courses, you know, in the US, Japan, and Europe to kids of all ages, you know, starting at elementary school, middle school, high school, undergraduates, PhD students. And that has been very exciting to me to explore how do you actually teach these kind of things. So I think, you know, it's really important to think about these things because, you know, computer science is in a real crisis. It's not connected to Lisp, but we have already lost about 40% of people enrolling in the US over the last 4 years in computer science programs. So there's something going terribly wrong here in terms of how we're actually motivating people, and it begins at the middle school age. So agent cubes has been one of these tools that we've used with scientists, but also with kids, where they can very quickly make these games. So over time, you know, we must have gotten, you know, probably by now hundreds of thousands of games that people have created with Agent Sheets, and Agent Sheets is completely implemented in Lisp. So you can say, you know, perhaps we can claim these kinds of things in terms of our Lisp history. So Agent Sheets, it is written in Lisp. Initially, it was written on the connection machine, but by now it has been sort of the world's most used game tool for kids, and it happens to be written in Lisp. So I think that's pretty exciting if you're excited in Lisp. It does include some features like Ristretto, which was a compiler we wrote in the early days that actually turned these programs that people created into Java bytecode. So the print wasn't dry yet, coming out of the Java virtual machine specification out of Sun, when we already created this kind of compiler, and people seem to be interested in that. Also, Lego Sheets was a side effect of our research, where we actually created the first prototype of what later became Lego Mindstorms. So that also was programmed in Lisp. So as you can see, you know, Lisp has many uses and quite exciting kind of things. But today I'm going to talk about sort of that's the past. I'm going to talk more about sort of the future, which is about agent cubes, where we create more complex kinds of applications. So we were dealing with medical applications. For instance, on the right-hand side there, we're dealing on the left-hand side, we're actually tracking entire Boulder, Colorado, all the buses in real time. We have equipped them with GPS systems. We're mapping these things and do interesting kind of applications like that. But enough of background. X expressions. What is it? How are we going to do it? Who needs it? How are we going to merge XML with Lisp? So what is the problem? So I'm claiming, and you be the judge, that the integration of XML and Lisp can actually create quite a bit of overhead if it's done sort of the traditional API way, right? And so I claim it should not be necessary, and here comes my list, to explicitly invoke any XML API function. It should not be necessary to build and parse DOM trees. It should not be necessary to set up callbacks. It should not be necessary to interface external resource descriptions. Of course, this may not apply to all the XML that you may do, so I'm not claiming that, you know, we built the world's greatest XML super compliant parser. I'm talking more about here at a conceptual level. So our approach is basically this. We integrate XML and Lisp at a language level. So that means, you know, we're not just loading an XML file and turn it into some kind of list or whatever it may be, but we're basically changing Lisp. We change the reader and the writer to completely integrate the syntax of XML. And I know some of you think that XML syntax is completely disgusting, but I can tell you that over time, if it's actually integrated nicely, you may actually change your mind. So you may want to give it a shot at some point. So an interesting feature here is that this is actually only possible in a programming language like a Common Lisp for the reasons that it has this unique combination of features, which include the meta object protocol, the ability to print objects with your own methods, and the fact that you can actually define macro character dispatching type of fields, and that you have multi-methods. So this combination is very unique and makes it very powerful. So how now it's quite time for me to give you an example here. So let's say, who has ever heard of SVG? Who has heard of scalable vector graphics? Raise your hand. So quite a few people, so I don't really need to say all that much. So the idea is that you have some XML kind of description, and it could be all kinds of objects, like in this particular case, let's say it's a circle. Now the question is, how would we define some kind of interface to take that circle, turn it into a class object, and maybe render it into a browser, something like that. Okay, let's see. So now I'm going to fiddle around here, and this is going to take some time. I'm not sure if you will be able to read this. Is this too small? I could zoom in, but then I need to move around like this, and then it could be getting a little nauseating, so it's your choice. So let's say that's my... So all I want to do basically is say, okay, let's say I want to have the circle thing, right? So my XML looks like something like this down here. And so all I would really want to have is a class that basically has the same slots and the same class name as this circle thingy. Right, so I'm setting it up, I say circle, I give it a couple of slots, CX, CY, R, because these are actually coming out of the SVG definition of a circle. And I'm basically saying, I'm done, that's it. Right? Why do I have to do more? That could be my complete XML interface. So if I evaluate this, so I evaluate the class, let's see if it can be able to show the listener at the same time. Or yes, that's not quite possible. Is it okay if I do this? So the class is defined. Now I say depth parameter circle, and I make an instance of a circle like this. So if I evaluate this now, maybe see the circle, and now let's see what actually is the circle. Voila. Right? Interesting. It looks like XML, because it is XML. So now if I access this, I say, okay, so what again is this CX of a circle? Well, it's just a slot. No surprise. If I say eval this circle thingy, then XML evaluates to XML. If I say do CX of the XML version here, where I just have a constant of an XML expression, then it gives me 15, because that's a new circle that I just defined here. If I say, and I guess we could do a quiz, guess what happens here. If I say EQ circle this, EQ circle that, would that be EQ? No, because it's a separate object. So, and we could do more experiments, but we don't want to spend too much time, but that gives you an initial flavor of what goes on here. So let's see, we go back to the presentation. So that was what that could be. Now, what is going on? Right, so usually we have this kind of model here. Right, externally on the right-hand side, I maybe have a file, some kind of representation of an XML type of thing. And I want to have some kind of application class in my application representing that instance, so I could use clause. Now I need to do stuff like, you know, some kind of XML API, read the file, create that DOM. The DOM has all kinds of stuff. Then I need to convert that stuff into my object that happens to probably just have a subset of things. And then I need to write it back at some other point in time and use the XML API again. And so we're going back and forth. So it can be pretty painful. And you easily forget stuff, or, you know, a lot of work and labor goes into it. That can be a huge pain. So I say, just say no. Just say no to the middleman, right? Cut out DOM. There may be reasons why you need the DOM, so I'm not saying, you know, never use the DOM, but at least for the kinds of things we do, we don't want to have the DOM, because also it would typically be just redundant. If you actually have a very large game world, for instance, it means if you have the DOM and the game application objects, you basically store things at least twice. Not a good idea either. So let's get rid of that. So the DOM goes away. And instead, we're using exit expressions and basically just let the Lisp do the work. We use the meta object protocol, we use the regular print and read functions, and let that be good enough. So how does that work? So X expressions. So we need to obviously extend the Lisp reader, right? Because usually the reader is not very happy if you just give it any kind of XML. That's not very hard, right? We can do that with some kind of a macro dispatch function. Then, of course, we need to use a little bit the mob, because what does the reader conclude if I give it a thing like a circle? What should it do with that? What should that turn into? Well, you know, I can say, well, if it's called the circle, maybe there's a class called the circle, and let's create an instance of that circle. If there's an attribute called something else, you know, maybe the circle has r equal 20, and there happens to be a slot called r, maybe that's the right slot, right? Let's do that little bit of match, and we're done. If things are more complex, it still works, right? So if I, on the right-hand side, you see a little bit of original RSS description of that Apple. If you have a structure like here's an RSS thing, whatever that may be, and the thing called a channel, so that would be a child element. All I need to do is I define two classes, one called RSS. I give it the same slots that RSS actually has. I create another thing called a channel. And if there's a match where RSS actually has a slot called the channel and two things match up, voila, done, right? No line of code, no method. I can read RSS. Now, if things are more complex, say if a channel has a thing called an item and I can have multiple items, what could I do then? Well, I just add a S here, plural S, I say items, and there's a class called item, and again, I'm done. Of course, then you point out, but what about name conflicts, etc., but we can deal with that too. Another thing is, you know, I want to have also be able to customize X expressions. For that, I can use so-called codecs. So I basically just add a little bit of meta information, which can go a long way. So for instance, in a class definition, I can just say, I give you a type. I tell you this slot is a number because I don't want to deal with it as a string. And voila, right? Good enough. Clause and the mob once again does the work for me, because why should I do have to do string and read from string and write to string and all this kind of stuff? And as a side effect now, I'm going to show you that in a second, we can also actually trigger things like, you know, starting a viewer, creating a window, doing all kinds of interesting stuff. So we're going to demo number two. See? So here's my file. I don't want to go to the details here. So there's more stuff now about SVG. There's a thing called a group. We definitely don't need to read that. Just notice the fact there happens to be now a little library with rectangles, circles, and text. But now the interesting part is really that I want to be able to read in more complex SVG, and I want to be able to animate that SVG. So the first thing I do, I'm just going to show you this XML stuff here. Now the interesting thing is I can select any bit of XML in my editor. So this could be Emacs, not just the eval, and you can see it evaluates to itself. But of course that can be at any level. It could say eval for me the structure of the group, right? And what I'm getting is the group. Why should we be surprised, right? That's the same verb, we're just in X expressions, it's like an S expression. No big surprise here, but we can do stuff that would be usually very tricky if I had to go to an API, because I can't just read part of an XML file and do stuff with that. Now I want to do something more interesting. I take this SVG, attach it to a variable. You could inspect that, my inspector would support that as well, but now I'm taking something like this example here and attach it to an SVG viewer. So if I do that, so if I evaluate that, the SVG viewer now is going to have a little side effect where it's actually going to render this thing into a browser. That's just Safari, right? And I just defined that. I could take any subpart of that, but now my example actually was animate SVG, right? Because what am I going to use the list for? I don't want to just have SVG and pump it into a browser, but let's say I want to actually animate my little thing that I just created. So all I have to do here, I added this method to my SVG viewer, so, you know, go a little bit, find the third shape in my group, and what does it do here? Change the height and the width, and then render it to the browser again. So let's see how that's going to look like, if I'm going to manage to get that on the screen all at once. Voila. Right, no big deal, right? Because that's obviously a trivial piece of Lisp code. Now, if you do, we could do other kinds of things. We can render them, you know, text. So I could actually make my slides like this. I'm not sure I want to. We could do something more simple, like just having a circle. Voila, right? It's very easy. So we could use that. But let's go back to the slides here.
Alex?
Yes?
So, I might have missed it, but what happens if you have multiple things with the same slot name, like the rect thing that you have there? Will it internally be a list of rects, or if I want to access it as a slot?
Right. Yes, exactly. So if there was this group with the multiple shapes, and that turned into a list. But I generalized it. I said a thing called a shape. Right, so I don't have to make a slot for precisely a rect or a circle or something. I created a superclass that was actually a shape. So let's see, so we had that. Now, side effects of that, some interesting ones are you can actually compile X expressions. And maybe you want to, maybe you don't want to. You will be able to see XML in your browser, debugger, stepper, listener, inspector. So that can be interesting. It's just part of the REPL, so you can do XML in Emacs. You can even include Unicode. It's a way for introducing Unicode into Lisp, because after all, you know, that the reader takes over, it can have a Unicode character, so that's kind of fun. And if you don't like the default matching, of course, everything can be changed. Now, just a quick excursion to Agent Cubes. How is my time actually?
15 minutes.
15? Wow. So why agent cubes? What are we trying to do now? So that's basic. That was actually one of the main motivations. We didn't actually want to create XML because we are very excited about XML, as I said, but we wanted to create these new authoring tools, and one of them is agent cubes. The idea behind agent cubes is that we want to have a tool to create interactive 3D for everybody. Right? So there's our bold sort of marketing statement. It should be simple end user authoring to make 3D models, animations, behaviors, and distributed computation. So that's quite the list. So this is actually a fairly big project. So one would be, we need to have these visual programming types of things, which we already had in agent sheets, but here we're doing, everything is rendered in OpenGL. So if I can actually take any of these X expressions that represents a language command, and can have that turn into an actual condition, action, whatever you want it to be, that is has a complete interface, right? So I can have parameters, like in this case, I want to say, you know, moves to the left, moves to the right, and that happens to be a pop-up menu. It could be having showing you images. You can twist this open with optional parameters, so it becomes very accessible to people who would never want to touch something like Lisp, never could touch something like Lisp. So that means, you know, we can have X expression be used to do things like interactive 3D editors of programs with drag and drop kind of interfaces. So if you want to, you can render your behavior in three dimensions. We haven't really found a good use for that yet, but at least it's a possibility. So maybe I should give you a little taste of just how the programming can look like. So here's, for instance, an agent cubes application where we are simulating traffic patterns, and here's an example of some behavior, and here's a palette of actions. It's a little smaller, fortunately, but here's a move action, and so I can drag that out of my palette, right? So it's a drag and drop kind of interface. I can do things that would be very similar to Lisp, right? I select something in my scene here, and then I apply, for instance, this move operation, saying, you know, take 2 seconds to get animated, move from one place to another, and voila. Right, so I can select anything, I can run very complex, very simple kinds of applications, from simple moving around to complex equations, that kind of thing. So that's X expressions as visual programming representations. I can use X expressions to generate cross-platform GUIs. That's sort of interesting. So let me show you that. So let's say I want to create, as part of agent cubes, an environment to create 3D objects. But you don't want to use a tool like Maya 3D, because you don't like the fact that it takes you a year to learn that kind of tool. So I'm creating this interface here, which is based, once again, on XML, XML GUI. I'm obviously not going to go through the list here, but I'm just going to evaluate this expression. And this has sort of interesting little bits that includes things like Photoshop-like 2D editors, like this one, right? So I have tools, palettes, sliders, and that's fairly complex here. I mean, I can really do pretty sophisticated stuff here. I mean, this has quite a bit of a subset of Photoshop, but in this particular case, I'm actually not interested in the 2D version. I'm saying, well, now I was drawing my nice red lobster, but I really want to have a 3D object, right? Because I'm creating a 3D world, so what can I do? So I go over here, which is an OpenGL kind of XML GUI thing, and I say, let's add some pressure here. I'm going to inflate this thing, right? Well, and if you have ever used Maya or things like that, you would probably appreciate that, you know, it probably takes quite a bit longer to do something like that in any of these tools. And then you can say, well, we could add some other things, you know, I'll add a little noise here, make it an old creaky crap, or, you know, use something like a transparent color, some, you know, maybe I don't want to have it to be red, maybe I want it to be this color, so we're going to have all these tools, right? We're going to fill it up like that, voila. Right, so we can edit things in 2D, 3D, fun stuff. But most important this whole interface was just created with this XML GUI, right? And this runs also, for instance, on Windows. So it's the same XML expression. So that's pretty handy. So finally, you know, these 3D kind of worlds, so that's really what we're after, right? We want to build these kinds of simulations that have, in this particular case, you know, it simulates how traffic signals work. So students created this, two students in 2 weeks. So that's one little application here. So let's go back to this. So you can see, you know, it's a complete OpenGL-based rendering thingy that we all did, and then of course it uses itself, so everything uses XMLisp. So we can run this city. So there's traffic happening, there's plotting going on in real time, so we can look behind the scenes here. There's a target, a couple of targets, you know, where cars are trying to go to. There's some plotting going on in the basement, and these cars are trying to make it there. The traffic signals have different schemes. One scheme would be called the Italian scheme, in which it's total anarchy. There's no synchronization between the traffic lights. The other one is the Swiss traffic scheme, where we actually try to synchronize things up. And what this simulation does is actually tries to plot the total number of time that people spend in the traffic waiting in the car. And it actually turns out that anarchy is not the best solution. So that was just a quick teaser here. Another thing that is also based on Agent Cubes is actually where we use X expressions for wireless communication. So this is interesting because the project actually simulates an entire human being. And the human being called Mr. Vetro is actually, from a Lisp point of view, a CLHTTP web server. So we're plugging all these organs into place. So the activity in the classroom is basically, I'm handing out the organs. I'm saying, you know, you are the heart, you are the lung. Let's see if you guys can actually balance a human being and see if you're going to physiologically kill that poor guy trying to do mountain biking, or if you can cope with the fact that, you know, CO2 is being too much or whatever is going to go on. And so there's going to be very interesting effects. You know, these people really get into sort of a situation of real drama, because we're taking away the control. Some of the traditional simulations actually gave too many controls to individuals in the classroom. So I'm sort of thinking, you know, we almost want to do the opposite of the kind of vision of education that I've seen yesterday. You know, we don't want to have people sitting behind computers anonymously controlled by a machine, but we want to have use computers to have them talk to each other, right? So we want to have computers in education that where basically this application depends. They need to talk to twiddle these controls and really talk to each other, and you can see real drama unfolding. You know, these guys almost freak out. They say, can't you see, you know, Mr. Vetro is almost dying on you guys. The heart needs to go fast. We're doing everything we can. You know, we're just alone. So, now finally, so what is XMLisp, right? So it could be two things. It could be two things, right? Is it, right, sort of a Trojan horse, but which one, right? Is it the Lisp on the outside, XML in the inside, which would be for XML skeptics, right, who actually gradually become Lisp programmers, or is it going to be XML on the outside and Lisp on the inside? That's for Lisp skeptical XML programmers. And if you think that category of people does not exist, I should tell you a little story about, you know, me teaching these video game courses. And so I usually ask the kids, like middle school kids, for instance, what's your hobby? And so in one case, this small boy says, my hobby is to edit XML files. Okay, so I said, interesting, tell me more. And so it turns out the reason why he's editing XML files is because, you know, you have some kind of game engine. And he figured out how he can edit those XML files to make new levels for the games. I'm thinking, yeah, that's a great idea, right? So what we can do and what actually works is that gradually, over content, they start adding a little bit of computation, right? You start with XML, and then you say, you know what, if you only could do a little bit of computation, how cool would that be? And that kind of works, right? So it is a Trojan horse. It goes both ways, and I think that's pretty exciting. I do invite you, you know, to use and extend X expression, so we have an open source version. as I said, you know, I'm warning you, it's not the most complete XML thing yet, but maybe the open source can help here. So we have a couple of ports. You can also, if you're interested, use, that's not the complete Agent Cubes engine, but the Open Agent engine is a subset that is enough, you know, for people to do pretty sophisticated OpenGL 3D game types of things without the visual programming part. So with that, I want to close, and I want to give you this kind of thought. You know, one of the things I hear being discussed on all kinds of news lists is things like Ruby is the Lisp of the internet, right? Shouldn't that be pretty insulting to us, right? I think it's time, you know, for us to stand up and say, no, you know, we can actually produce new ideas. We can extend stuff. We're not stuck. Let's make Lisp the Lisp of the internet. And so I think, you know, maybe X expressions are a small step towards that goal. Thank you.
Questions. So, Scott?
Object identity, when dumping XML and loading it back in.
Yes, I mean, things can get pretty hairy. I mean, sometimes you need to write methods, right? I mean, it's not everything as simple, right? So there's a really good chance that in the more complex cases, if you have a tree or even a nested graph, you definitely need to write these methods where you sort of sort things back out and do stuff like that.
So it's just a protocol for saying that some things are identical, and when they get sucked back in, they won't show up as two.
Right. So typically you would say, you know, if it has a unique key or something like that, then you just sort it by that key.
Good enough. Okay. Jerry?
I have about three different ones, but let's try this one. Real serious XML has namespaces that don't really behave the way Lisp packages work. Okay, it's sort of like a set of nicknames for something that has some other real strange thing. How would you go about handling that, or in fact figuring out that two or three of them might all be referring to the same namespace, even though they look different?
No, I mean, we have still some limited namespace management, but you can use namespaces in XMLisp. So you can have, you know, where you say namespace colon, and that can be, you know, for the element name as well as for the attribute name. So we can handle that to some degree.
That gives me colon as something different in Lisp than it is in XML.
Oh yeah, no, we're internally matching that, of course. No, but we're not matching that one to one into Lisp, right? I mean, still there's the notion of the packages, and we're using the Lisp packages to establish mappings between these things. But we're not translating that one to one. So we actually need to really look at that stuff and say, if that person, you know, has an XML thing where it says, you know, blah blah colon element name, then we're doing stuff like looking up in packages and making translation. Does that symbol exist in a certain package? Is it being exported? Can we really use it? Is it referring to an XML thing? So that's quite a bit of complexity, certainly.
Yeah, that sort of leads. I'm sorry, Mr. Gallen.
Okay. What a comment on that.
We had a presentation, the first one this morning, from Manuel Serrano, that had a way of, well, he was talking about HTML, but he was embedding it really is just lists of tokens. He didn't have the closing things, he just closed the list, but it would be like open paren, open bracket, tr bracket, and then would have basically pairs afterward for values, and they nest perfectly fine. And you could treat them in Lisp exactly like they're being property lists, for example. Wouldn't it be better to have a fancy reader that turns it into something like that, and then you just have a printing issue to print it out?
I'm not sure. I mean, the basic way is, you know, we read the things in, and if there's a prefix that indicates a namespace, we actually, you know, we can keep references.
But how did you find the mapping? There's, in XML, you can have the same prefix.
Let's talk about that just a moment. Franz has developed an interface, a WSDL interface. Unfortunately, the documentation is less than penetrable. But in fact, you have to do precisely this problem. You do mappings. They have a construct called define or declare namespace, and they define namespace map. And the point is that you will be mapping the namespaces into arbitrary packages, possibly. Arbitrary packages. I find it convenient to use two-letter nicknames for those packages, but they don't have to be. And similarly, they're identified with unique identifiers so that when you have a unique, say you might have NS or BC is used as a namespace identifier in three different WSDL forms, and you can still map those to separate packages and deal with them in WSDL.
I think this becomes very, very technical now. Maybe one final question here.
Does your reader handle the white space within the XML?
Does it have to do what?
Does it handle white space?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically just it's as close as we, you know, could do it to regular.
Yeah, but XML. I mean, the list reader will ignore white space, which.
No, the XML reader takes over, right? I mean, the moment where basically the list reader gets to the point where it says, hey, that looks like some XML stuff. It basically sort of forks over to the XML reader, and the XML reader can do whatever it wants to, right? It could even input, you know, Unicode and deal with white space any way it wants to, and it just needs to be sure that it can detect the end of the XML thing, because then it goes back to the Lisp reader, right? It says, well, I read all this stuff, and I think it's this kind of a thing that you can interpret as a clause instance.
Yeah, I don't think we really have much more time. Maybe one short question over there.
Yeah, do you do something special for badly formed HTML files, XML files, or do you assume that the XML is correct?
Well, I mean, there's a not super special. I mean, there's some error handling. I mean, for instance, one of the nice things that we have, you know, depending on what version of the so XMLisp is very general, so it's portable, but we have added some specific extensions. For instance, if there is an error in Macintosh Common Lisp, it will open up the file and put the cursor at that place and sort of give you an error message, which is not the greatest thing, but it can help. You know, if you have a huge XML file, at least you get an error message and it says, you know, something funky happened as you are reading this XML file and it's here. And that's usually good enough of a clue.
Is your question short?
Yes.
Okay.
What's the coder of an anchor tag?
What's the coder of an anchor tag?
Bringing it into a list. What's the coder of an anchor tag? Does that just blow up or what?
Well, we could try it.
Download it and try it. Okay. Thank you again.